I am talking with my old dear friend, Cheryl Reed, who was on one of my various radio shows some years ago talking about her first book, which was about long, it was like 4 years you worked on that book, isn't it? It was about why women become nuns and what that whole thing was like. It was called Unveiled, The Hidden Lives of Nuns. Her new book is a novel, her first novel. Novels are very hard to write, ladies and gentlemen. Trust me on that. It is called Poison Girls. It is set in Chicago, and it's a remarkable book.
Thank you. That is the first
of the many words of praise you will get about this book. Do you miss, Cheryl, the newspaper business? I got to ask you, because there is a grand, the star of the book here is a female reporter for a newspaper in Chicago. And I sense in reading the book, you have a great affection for what that life used to a great affection for what it was like in newspapers. I mean, a real palpable affection in this book.
Yeah, I do miss being in a newsroom, but I miss a newsroom that was, not the newsroom that is.
Yeah.
And, you know,
and certainly not the newsroom that the world is becoming. That's
What newsroom is that? People are reporting from, you know, their bedrooms, pajamas. So, I mean, I miss the newsroom where you had quirky characters and people put up with them because they were really good writers and they were good reporters and nobody cared about people's personal lives or what they did. And you know, people had weird behaviors and we just overlooked it. And people would erupt. I mean, I remember being in the Sun-Times where I recall a columnist literally stomping on the floor and getting on the floor and pounding on the floor like a big baby. And I'm not going to say who that was, but he's still there.
Yes, I know who it is. And, yeah. See, this is why it's great to have Cheryl on for the next 45 minutes, because she can say things like that. And I go, oh, yeah, I know who that would be. I know who that would be. This book is in a sense, this novel, based on a lot of reporting that you've done over the years, isn't it?
Yes.
How does that, what's the metamorphosis in that whole thing? I mean, are you taking notes years ago? Or how does it, do you know what I mean?
I'm trying.
It's an awkward way of asking this question about how that coalesces into a novel.
Well, originally, the beginning of the book arose from when I covered girls doing crack cocaine in the 1990s. And I had some horrific things that happened. And, you know, as a reporter, you cover, especially like a street reporter or a crime reporter or an investigative reporter, you have these, it's almost like cops, you know, they have these stories that stick in their claw. You have these stories that really, you know, eat away at your soul. And that was one of those stories, and it always stuck with me. And then when I started reading in the mid-2000s, you know, in Chicago, there were these little stories. They weren't big stories. They were stories about, you know, hundreds of people dying of fentanyl-laced heroin. What was this? Why was this happening? And so I became, you know, obsessed.
You became very powerfully obsessed, and I'm spending all the way until 11 o'clock with Cheryl Reed, my old friend, former reporter for the Sun-Times, former book editor of the Sun-Times as well, here with her husband, Greg, long-suffering husband. All husbands of novelists are long-suffering. That's what I can tell you. Her novel is called Poison Girls, and it's cops, politics. It is everything good and bad about this crazy city set at a time when a young guy in Hyde Park is thinking of becoming president and other people have aspirations for getting the Olympic Games here and people are dying. It begins with, what do you call them, the Angels? Remind me what they're... Yeah,
the Dead Angels.
The Dead Angels. Three... young women who shouldn't be, not the kind of women who die, right?
No, no. So the book begins, there have been a series of deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of newspapers that we know, A lot of newsrooms, they don't cover drug deaths unless they're unusual. And so when white girls started, white elite school girls started showing up dead, then suddenly an epidemic that had been going on for some time that newsrooms ignored suddenly became news. And so this young reporter is sent to cover these stories about these young girls dying. And in the middle of this, you know, the newspaper industry is collapsing. There's all these people being laid off. So she sees this opportunity as her ticket to keep her job.
Yeah.
So,
well, there is a kind of she's a fascinating character in there. There's one, I wish I could read the whole chapter. There are lovely kind of flashbacks to her previous life, to I'm trying to find. You know, this is a stupid way to do a radio show where I'm like thumbing through a book, trying to find stuff. But here she recaptures, I think, very precisely in a paragraph what it was like, what it's always been like, especially for female reporters to go into nasty neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Here she is writing in Poison Girls. You don't mind if I read a little thing to you? For the most part, I didn't have a reason to be afraid. As soon as people learned I was a journalist, they wanted to tell me their story. Talking to a reporter meant they mattered. And even though I told them I was from the Chicago Times, they always, always asked when they would see themselves on TV, as if I could film them with my eyeballs. That is such a perfect paragraph to describe what it's like to be out there on the streets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get, I don't want you to expose all of your novelistic secrets. The plot of this is not a simple plot. There's a lot going on. There's there are big backdrops to the main story. Mm-hmm. How did you do that? Did it come to you when you started writing? You said, "Well, I remember some of this stuff and I want to put it in," or how does that, did you outline the plot?
So I wrote the book over, I wrote the book, I probably would say at least 100 times. And I wrote it over a period of 12 years. And people have said, oh, you wrote it and then you put it away. No, I wrote it and I kept writing it and I kept writing it. And I got to a point where I thought, well, I have a lot of bad habits as a journalist. So I got my MFA at Northwestern in fiction. And while you're doing that, I was still writing. Everything I was doing for the book was I was using for my thesis to get my MFA. And then I kept writing. And every agent I had a different – they wanted me to go in a different way. Every editor I had wanted me to go in a different way. Until finally I said, this is the story. And I know this is the story. This is what I want to write. And so there's always – it's kind of a technique – that, you know, there's always the story, the story that's happening, but you always want to have what's happening in the world. And as a reporter, you want to have the backdrop of the history of what's going on. And they all come together, particularly in this book, because it's about daughters of powerful Democratic families.
Yeah.
And so it's connected.
Wow. That's an interesting story. I must tell you, too, and you know better than anybody because you were the book editor of the Chicago Sun-Times, that this is such a horrifying, wicked, stupid book publishing environment where it seems as if every publisher is looking for, you know, if you can't be the next Stephen King, could you be the next James Patterson kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And it is tough to get an agent. But boy, am I glad this book has been published because I love this book. And because it's, you know me, it's part of it is so... So newspapery, and the reporter's parents live in Hyde Park, and she lives in Lakeview, and it's very – I am not going to come up with that great cliche that Chicago is a character in this book. It's not a character in the book. It's set in Chicago. And so how – what did you learn getting an MFA? Was that a valuable thing for you? I'm serious. Was that a valuable thing for you?
Okay, so I went through J school, right?
Yeah.
Journalism school.
Yeah.
I actually have a master's and an undergrad in journalism school. So I went to get my MFA, and I thought, you know, here are these great Chicago writers, right? Stuart Dybeck, Janet Burroway, Alexander Heeman. These were all my professors. And I remember being in one of my first classes, and I said, So what are the rules for writing fiction? You know, we have rules for journalism.
Oh, sure.
And one of my very famous professors said, there are no rules. And so I'm thinking, well...
Wow, this should be fun.
Yeah, also, yeah. Like, what the hell am I doing here, right?
Right.
But, you know, I think there are some things that you learn. You learn certain techniques and certain rules. But in general, there are no rules. It's not like journalism. It is about your imagination and trusting your imagination.
I also think that being in a, knowing him a bit, being in a room with Stuart Dybeck would be inspiring.
So,
just to listen to how Stuart thinks, which I haven't done. We've had drinks together. But to listen to how Stuart thinks about writing and what he thinks about writing would be inspiring, I think.
Stuart was a big influence on the book. He was my master thesis advisor. So he read the book. He read portions of this book more than I think he really wanted to. But so he knows the book well.
Well, and he has a lovely jacket quote here. And Stuart is put upon frequently to give jacket quotes, and he doesn't often do it. When he does, I know it's meaningful. He writes an ambitious book, noirish, Dickensian, in a modern way, and rooted in the realistic tradition. It tells a complex story. That's pretty good.
Thanks.
Cheryl Reed is in here for the rest of the day. We're going to tell her, we're going to tell you about some upcoming events. One is this week, right?
Yeah, so on Tuesday night, I'm with Sarah Paretsky.
Pretty good writer.
The queen of thrillers on the South Side. I'm going to be at 57th Street Books at 6 o'clock. And so Sarah and I are going to talk about the book. And then on Friday, I will be at Women and Children First at 7:30 with Jamie Frevoletti.
Another good writer.
Another amazing thriller writer. And then afterwards, we're going to have a big party.
You can get all of this information at Cheryl's website at cherylreed.net.
Yes.
.net. That always takes me. Well, Greg knew. Greg's in. Your husband was an editor here, and he knows I'm like an idiot when it comes to remembering things. We'll talk more about Poison Girls and about Cheryl's career, and she's now teaching at Syracuse University, and I will read some more from this fine book entitled Poison Girls. You'll hear more about the hurricane and the sad things going on down there, too. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Welcome back. I'm Rick Hogan. The show's After Hours. My guest is Cheryl Reed, the author of, most recently, what's the pub date on this book?
Tuesday.
As they used to say in the business.
Yes, September 12th.
Tuesday. It is called Poison Girls. You can go to Cheryl's website, which is cherylreed.net, where you can see. You know, what I actually think you should do is you should go on Tuesday to the 57th Street Books, because the great and charming and everything Sarah Paretsky will be talking to Cheryl about her book. And Sarah knows a thing or two about books. Here's another Kogan excerpt of Cheryl's book. Lately, a new kind of stress has infiltrated the newsroom. Whispers of bankruptcy and more layoffs. Meanwhile, and I'll skip down a little bit. Meanwhile, the Times is a gothic tower with its beady-eyed gargoyles and its facade embedded with stones collected by reporters all over the world, resembled a medieval fortress, outdated and antiquated, a historical artifact amid the city's burgeoning skyline of sleek blue metal and glass. I know that's personal to me, but that also it gives you a really interesting indication of what a stylish writer Cheryl Reed is, I think.
Thanks.
My pleasure. So, in trying to get this book published in this, as I mentioned before, horrific publishing environment, where I know, and I'm sure you know too, even from your days as a book editor, there are a lot of books, I mean, most publishers are looking for sure sellers, big blockbusters. Let's, you know, give me the new James Patterson or the new Le Carre, who I do admire. How hard was it to get this book published?
It was extremely hard. One reason was that I had a lot of interest from the biggies, and in fact, the publisher who published it was at one of the big houses, and she couldn't get it published. And so when she jumped to become the publisher at a small independent, I was the first book that she bought.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so the response I got was nobody wanted to publish a book about girls, young girls doing heroin. And
yeah, because that like doesn't happen in the world. It's like science fiction. Yeah, that's crazy to me. That's just crazy to me. Was it frustrating to you?
It was, but it was like, you know, it was like the literary world mirroring the newspaper world because, yeah. You know, the reason why this story meant so much to me was because when I wrote about girls doing drugs originally and throughout my career, everyone was afraid to write those stories,
yeah.
And afraid to publish them. And so it was the same thing that I was getting in the book publishing world as well.
Well, you really hit on one of the problems, I think, that has afflicted newspapers forever is ignoring the real stories that are going on here unless they somehow appeal to dead white rich girls dying of heroin is almost like some kind of celebrity story. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of disgusting to me. How empowering has it been, however, to sign that contract, to get the first advanced copy of the book, and to know that you're going to be published? It's been a long time coming. So
it's been a long time
like,
coming.
Yeah.
I got the book. I actually just got the book a couple days ago. And, you know, you never... It's like your first baby or something, you know. You never get over that. The minute you see the book, the minute you feel the copy, the paper copy or the cover, and you just, you know, all this hard work, it's there, right? It's not, you know, because now we're doing everything on a computer screen. It seems ethereal, you know, but now this is physical. This is the physical manifestation of all those years of what happened and what I did.
The other thing, and you know this again, I keep saying this, you know this better than almost anybody, is that once the book's written, then in many ways, that's when the work starts. You have to market that.
Yes.
It is, you know, something that would, you know, thank God J.D. Salinger wasn't around for this kind of book era, you know what I mean, or Thomas Pynchon or somebody. How is that? I mean, you seem, mm-hmm. if you're going to sit down with Sarah mm-hmm. Paretsky and talk on Tuesday mm-hmm. and be at this, is that a part of this you think you will enjoy, Cheryl Reed?
Well, I have to, this go around as compared to the last go around when my first book came out over 10 years ago is completely different. And I had to do a lot of the publicity stuff on myself. But I had a really good publicist. But, you know, it's at a small independent publisher. You know, what's interesting now is that I'm pitching to blogs, thriller blogs, because that's who has the market now. And I was pitching to a blog that does thrillers and mysteries. And the owner of the blog, the person who runs the blog, wrote me back and said, well, I just don't think we could review this book because we have an opioid crisis in our area. And I couldn't stomach writing about this. And I was like, I wrote back to her and I said, I come from Chicago where there are murders all the time. And yet, does that mean that you can have thrillers and mysteries about murders? I mean, it's really interesting how people can divide the, you know, crime. You know, certain crime is okay to write about and other crime isn't. I don't know.
Oh, no, that's crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. That's well, but then again, Cheryl, not to diminish all of you people out there who run blogs, but it's like, you know, who's running these blogs? That's the problem. This book, Poison Girls, has a lot of... you know, I'm no Hollywood producer, but this has a lot of cinematic possibilities. Does that enter into a first novelist's thoughts at all? I got to tell you, it probably doesn't enter into Stuart Dybeck's thoughts. But
it doesn't enter that much into my – it does enter into my husband's. But we have had some interest. So, you know, my agent obviously is taking that up. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
This would be a great. I think it would be fantastic.
So I did get to correspond with. They're doing an audio version. So Audiobooks is doing one, and I got to meet my the actress who plays the parts. So it was really funny because I had to send her a note and explain all the different voices and the accents. So I actually sent her a John Belushi Saturday Night Live. Skit, you know, video clip from, and to say, hey, this is how the guys on the, you know, there's a cop who has a Southside, you know, nasal accent, you know, and I said, this is how you have to pronounce, you know, this is how you have to speak like him. Oh, and she actually really appreciated it.
Oh, that's great. You can do that now, too.
Yeah.
Now, does one person read the entire book?
Yeah, they do.
Wow.
So she has to be able to do a lot of accents. There's Indiana accents, there's Chicago accents.
There are tons of accents in here. She's got to be men and women. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Black and white. And...
Yeah. Yeah. In the book, your parents live, are professors at the reporter in the book, are professors at the University of Chicago. They live in Hyde Park. You live in Lakeview. You have a, and there's a great, great scene near the end at Graceland Cemetery, one of my favorite places in the world. You seem to really enjoy visiting Chicago on the pages of this book. Yes?
Chicago is a character in the book. Yeah. It's kind of a love story to Chicago.
No question.
I mean, it's about, where else are you going to get all these characters? I mean, you know, and the other thing is that I wanted to use all the politicians. So, you know, I don't name the politicians, but there is the governor.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah.
Who has hair like Elvis and who makes a buffoon of himself at a press conference. You know, and all these things that you cannot make up. And a lot of those things happened. I mean, you know, I took things from real life.
No question. Yeah, you visit Graceland here and write... the meeting was set for 8 o'clock just before the cemetery closed when there were fewer people. It's a terrific book. We'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Cheryl Reed after a little break. I was just talking to Cheryl Reed in the last segment about all of the problems at the Chicago Tribune. I will have to continue on talking about her book now and not all the problems at the Chicago Tribune. What about, Cheryl, you were the book editor of the Chicago Sun-Times for a time, and one of the problems, I think, in any recently published book is you were talking about, you know, a blog and getting some mention on a blog. The old conventional way of getting reviewed in book sections in newspapers doesn't exist anymore, does it? We have a couple pages, I think.
Well, I have a really good friend, and actually one of my former editors at the Sun-Times is now at the Washington Post. And I sent her a note, and I said, hey, any chance you could help me get a review?
Yeah.
And she sent me back a note and said, we're told not to do reviews because it doesn't get enough hits.
Ugh.
You know, so, you know, that's the world we live in.
Yeah, it really is. The world we also live in is a hurricane world. I'm going to read you a commercial, and then, well, Cheryl liked this commercial. The curse of the billy goat is over, and we've got, finally, Northside champions. But the billy goat lives on in the friendly taverns at Dot Chicago and in the brand new place, too. In the freezer section of your local Jewel Osco, at any of the 185 Jewel Osco stores in the Chicagoland area, you'll find the world-famous billy goat burgers, frozen and ready to go home with you. That's right, frozen. But you're the chef, so try adding some cheese. That's how you'll be able to create the one and only world champion cheeseburger. Now let's get an update from Roger Badish on the hurricane troubles.
Thank you, Rick. And we're keeping our eye on Hurricane Irma, tracking the radar as the eye of the hurricane makes its way north through the middle of the state of Florida towards Highway 4 right now, Tampa Bay area. And we're going to get an update here from ABC News in a little bit. The northern outer rings of Hurricane Irma are in Georgia and Alabama right now. Western rings hitting Alabama. But southern Florida, which has already been impacted by Hurricane Irma, is now clear of storm surge and rain. And they are slowly starting to recover, even though it's still nighttime. There are curfews in place. Here's ABC.
Hurricane Irma making a beeline for Tampa. ABC's TJ Holmes is there.
This is the place that ranks, or has been ranked, as one of the top places in the world that's vulnerable for flooding. They can get a strong rainstorm anytime during the year, and this place is prone to flood. But now you're talking about a 5 to 8 foot storm surge that's going to be coming, and it really has people anxious in a way that they have never been anxious before.
Rob Gold with Florida Power and Light says nearly 3.5 million customers are without power.
On the East Coast, what we've seen is it's going to be more of a repair effort, talking about days. Candidly, what we're seeing on the West Coast, there's so much damage that we believe we're going to see. We could be talking about a complete rebuild, which in fact could take weeks.
President Trump is declaring much of the state of Florida a federal disaster area, opening up millions of dollars in funding. With continuing coverage, Hurricane Irma, Daria Albinger, ABC News.
And we will continue to have updates throughout the night. Roger Battish in the WGN newsroom. Rick, back to you.
There's some calls. I'm telling Cheryl Reed more stories that I can't tell on the air. Cheryl is a former incredibly talented investigative reporter, book editor, reporter of all sorts for the Chicago Sun-Times, in my experience with her. She's also the author of, a while ago, a fascinating book called Unveiled, The Hidden Lives of Nuns. It is not a kind of scandal book. It is a very, very deep dive into what compels women to be nuns. I mean, that basically, right?
Mm-hmm. Why would you want to give up men, sex, and money?
I can think of a million reasons, yeah. But, I mean, you wrote it over 4 years.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was...
I interviewed 300 nuns.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that book was very well received, mm-hmm. if memory serves.
Yes.
I mean, I was well received by me.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean anything for your bank account. I hate to, as the book comes out, the book's official publication date is Tuesday, and it's a cool cover, too. It's
Thank
a
you.
Very, very cool cover.
Thank you.
Poison Girls. Cheryl's website is CherylReed.net. You're empowered by this book. You have a lot of work now to help sell this book,
mm-hmm.
out and about, including Tuesday at the 57th Street Books with the one and only Sarah Paretsky, mm-hmm. Discussing the book, where you can buy the book, and I'm sure Cher will autograph the book for you, because that's what authors do. You got another one in the
yes.
works?
So this is a serious character, I think. You know,
fantastic.
And it's the next one is set in Chicago and the area. There's a character in this book, her main source is called Mo.
Yep.
And he's a black homicide detective. And he features prominently in the next book, as does an editor at one of the newspapers. And it's a three narrative. So it's like you go back and forth between these three people, one of whom you don't know who it is.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds great. How far along?
Well, I'm pretty far along. I need some time
to
finish it.
Was I going to be 12 years? Yeah. Yeah, between teaching at Syracuse, promoting this book, being on the radio, sitting with Sarah Paretsky and doing this, you find the time. Do you, now that you are a novelist,
mm-hmm.
do you think of yourself as a novelist?
I think of myself as a writer because,
yeah.
I mean, yes, I have the next book that I think is going to come out. But I'm also thinking about, you know, I was in Ukraine for almost a year.
Right.
And
right, right.
I wrote a big piece about investigative reporting in Ukraine for CJR, Columbia Journalism Review, and I've written some stuff for The Washington Post. And I keep thinking, you know, I'm tenure track now, so I have to produce journalism research. So I keep thinking, well, maybe I'll do a book on Ukraine or something. You know,
wow,
who knows what the next book
sure.
might be.
Sure. We'll just change the title of the nuns book and say, look what I just did. Look what I just did. They don't know anything at these universities. How did you wind up at Syracuse?
Well, I wanted to stay in Chicago, but because of the budget crunch in Chicago at the university,
no
it's just,
kidding.
It's people are fleeing the state.
No, I know.
It's
I know.
Horrible.
Yeah, it is
I
horrible.
Really had no choice. I really wanted to stay at UIC. That was where my heart was, but, you know.
Well, I'm glad you came back for a visit. The book is, again, the novel, Cheryl Reed's first novel, Poison Girls. It is a real Chicago book, in the same way that our mutual friend Julia Keller has staked out West Virginia. Mm-hmm. Cheryl has staked out Chicago. She has some remarkable characters in here, too, who, all of whom deserve to be, not all of them, but a number of them who deserve to make a repeat visit in your next novel. Cheryl, it's great to see you. It's great to see your... Where's the long-suffering Greg? He's back there. The husband's back there somewhere. It's great to see you. Have fun with Sarah Perez.
Thank you so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Now we got some commercials, and then I'll say goodbye to you people.